Okay, I want to speak about a few topics from Tazria and Mitzora, and I hope we'll get to all of them. Start at the beginning of Tazria. Chazal, Rashi brings it down, comment that the parsha of Leza, Isha Tazria, is right after the parsha of Kashrus. The Torah of Behemos and Chayos, which ones are kosher, which ones are not. And the Gemara comments, why is that? Again, Rashi brings it down. Because just like in creation, the creation of man was after all the Behemos and all the Chayos, so too the Torah of man, the Torah of birth, comes after the Torah of animals. What's the meaning? So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, two reasons why man was created last. If he does what he's supposed to do, and he acts properly, then he was created last in order to signify that everything in creation was created for the sake of man. In order that he should utilize it, he's the only one who has free choice. And he should be able to utilize it in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in that way, give meaning and purpose to everything in creation. If he doesn't do what he's supposed to do, so then he was created last, as if to say, even a mosquito is more important than you because a mosquito was created before you. The man is of least importance because everything else in creation, by its very being, does what it's supposed to do. It fulfills its tafkid in this world. And if man chooses not to fulfill his tafkid, then he's worse than everything else. Similarly, the Torah put the halachos of leida, of birth, the emergence of a new human being, after the halachos of how to deal with animals, because that's why man was created after. So he should know how to deal with the world properly. Now it's interesting, the parsha immediately after the parsha of birth is the parsha of Tzaras. Tzaras is like a person who's a living dead person, a zombie. Tzaras gives the appearance of dead flesh. It's like the flesh is dead. It's like the person is alive, but he's really dead. That's what Tzaras represents. And he has the halach of a dead person. He's metame, and the soul is metame like a mace, just as if he was a dead body. We'll get in a few minutes to the kaparas and the what happens to a metzora or whatever, but let's see first the basic idea. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, and we're probably not going to get to that parsha before the end of the year, Parsha Shlach. So we'll speak about it now, Parsha Paloscha. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to remember what Miriam did when she spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe Rabbeinu, and in that way we should remember not to speak Lashon Hara. Now, on the surface, it seems a little, what's a good word? It seems a little strange. Because every time we remember what Miriam did, we're basically speaking Lashon Hara about Miriam. The Torah said, speak Lashon Hara about Miriam, so you'll remember not to speak Lashon Hara. Doesn't make sense. Also, there's a medrash that says that in the schus that Miriam waited for her brother Moshe when he was a baby to see what would happen to him. And that's because the entire Jewish people waited for Miriam when she was in the Tzora and she had to wait 7 days outside the camp. And even though they were supposed to break camp and travel, the Amon stopped and waited to cover Miriam. Now think about it. That doesn't sound too much to Miriam's credit or in her best interest. The only ones who knew that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara was the Rabbana Shalom, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. It was a very private family thing. And if the Jewish people had broken camp and traveled, probably nobody would have noticed that Miriam's not there. And 7 days later, the Rabbanim would have given her a fast horse and given her a chance to catch up to the Jewish people. And she could sneak into the camp. Nobody would have known. But now, all of a sudden, the Amon stops and everybody's talking. Why are we stopping? And said, well, because Miriam is a Metzora, so we have to wait for her. Why is she a Metzora? Because she spoke Lashon Hara. So that's a great schus. And the schus that she cared for her brother, everybody in Klal Yisrael found out about what she did. I don't know what kind of schus that is. What I think is the following. Miriam, if she sinned, the Rambam describes it as totally on purpose. Totally accidental. It probably was a sin, but it's totally worse than choking, less than choking. She intended good, not bad. She didn't want to hurt Moshe Rabbeinu. She wanted to fix up his Shalom Bayis, because she heard that he separated from his wife because he was a Navi. And she knew that she was a Navi and Aaron was a Navi. They didn't have to separate from their spouses. She didn't appreciate Moshe Rabbeinu's Nebu and the difference between their Nebu and his. And all she wanted to do was help Moshe Rabbeinu. She didn't go and start whispering rumors about Moshe Shalom Bayis to strangers. She went to her younger brother, Aaron, and she told him, I think Moshe has a problem in the house. Let's see what we can do. She meant it only for his good. Her mistake was she should have gone directly to Moshe Rabbeinu instead of going to Aaron. So it was Lashon Hara. But it was with good intentions. It wasn't to harm. And it didn't do any harm. Didn't do any harm at all. Moshe was Amav Mikol Adam. Didn't bother him. He had an answer. Didn't affect his reputation. Didn't affect anything. It had no bad repercussions. And still, look what happened to Miriam. So what we learn from Miriam is that even if you speak Lashon Hara and you fall into it by mistake, but if it's Lashon Hara, it's devastating. And the fact that it's a mistake and you have good intentions doesn't make any difference. You know, it's like once I had the following, this really happened. Somebody came to me with a shaila. I'll tell you the background before I tell you what the shaila was. He reconstructed the situation as follows. His wife had been cleaning the kitchen. This was about 30 years ago. And they still had glass bottles, if you know what those are. And the bleach that she was using to clean the kitchen was in a glass bottle. And the bottle fell over and broke, but it broke neatly across the top. So most of the bleach was still intact. But it was a broken bottle. She didn't want to lose the bleach, so she poured the bleach into a Coke bottle. She left it on the floor. One of her children came into the room and saw a bottle he thought it was Coke, on the floor. So he wanted to do a favor for his mother, and he put it in the refrigerator. The husband came home from a tennis match, very thirsty, and he opened the refrigerator just enough to put his hand in and feel around for the first Coke bottle. And his hand got the Coke bottle with the bleach, took it out, put it to his lips, Baruch Hashem, when the bleach hit his lips, he realized that it wasn't classic Coke, new Coke, old Coke, wasn't even something from Israel. It was not something to drink. And he didn't drink it. He wanted an ocean, Bench Gomo, because in a few seconds, had he drunk it, that would have been the end. So, Lemaisa, what's it called? Let's say over here, nobody had any bad intentions. The wife wanted to save some money. The child wanted to help the mother. The father just wanted to take a drink. Nobody intended to do anything bad. But if he had drunk that bleach with all the good intentions in the world, it would have burned his fingers out. Same thing with Lashon Hara. All the good intentions of the world, if in fact what you speak is Lashon Hara, it's like drinking bleach. And it's devastating. The fact that it's clear that Miriam meant no malicious harm, that she fell into this, it was shocking. It was Lashon Hara. But it was purely accidental, right? Shows that Lashon Hara is a devastating thing. And then it's not Lashon Hara against Miriam anymore. Because we're not saying Miriam did something bad or wrong. We're learning from her mistake how terrible Lashon Hara is. That's a schus for her. But it has to be clear that she didn't do it to Kavana. Because if she did it to Kavana, then it's taka Lashon Hara about her, and it's taka not a schus. How do you know she didn't do it to Kavana? Because when her little baby brother was a baby, she put her life on the line to sit there and wait, which was dangerous. Because if it's found out that she had a connection to this baby in the water and Paro's officers caught her, they'd kill her, trying to harbor a Jewish baby. So she might have put her life in danger to take care of her little brother. Is it possible to think that such a sister would speak Lashon Hara maliciously against that same brother? So in the schus that she waited for him, she had another schus that Klal Yisrael should learn for generations. How terrible Lashon Hara is without it being something malicious against her, but it's obvious she didn't mean anything malicious. But we learn from her the devastating result of Lashon Hara, even if you don't mean it maliciously, koshkin, if you mean it maliciously. It's like bleach. Even if you think you're drinking soda, it's going to have a tremendously devastating, detrimental effect. And what is that effect? What does that mean? You know, the Gemara says there's two kapparas for Lashon Hara in the Mikdash. One was the me'il, which had bells on the bottom, made noise, and the other was the ketores. So the Gemara says the ketores is mechaper on Lashon Hara shebechashor, silent Lashon Hara. And the me'il, which makes noise, is mechaper on Lashon Hara shebekol, noisy Lashon Hara. The simple idea is, one is that you speak openly, and one you whisper behind a person's back. But it can't be that shut. Because where do we learn that the ketores is mechaper? From the fact that it was mechaper on the Lashon Hara that Klal Yisrael spoke against Moshe Aaron. Atzim hamitim asan Hashem. After Machlokas Korach, when Korach was swallowed up, the people came and complained, you killed them. Spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe Aaron. And that was the call. They said it openly. So it can't be Lashon Hara. Shebechashoy means Lashon Hara that you don't say openly. Because where we learn that it's Machaper is where he spoke it openly. What I think it means is the following. There are two things that need kapart. There's what you do, the harm by what you said. That's the harm to the person you're speaking about. The harm you do to the person who listens to you. That's the Lashon Hara shebekol, the damaging effect that the sound of the Lashon Hara has, the words have, the effect on other people, on the person you're speaking about, the person you're speaking to. But there's Lashon Hara shebechashor, it's like they say about high blood pressure. It's the silent killer. No symptoms. You don't even know you have it. So too, there's a silent, devastating power of Lashon Hara that harms the person who speaks it. Not what you said, but just the saying itself There's a silent danger. It harms the person who spoke it. Why? Because basically, we are human beings by token of our speech. We are chai hamedaber. That's what distinguishes us from the animal. And we were created to speak. The Gemara says, Adam la'amo yulad. Person was created to toil, to bring out his potential in this world. He was created imperfect and is here to perfect himself in the world. Gemara says, I don't know what that perfection is supposed to be. Maybe it's supposed to be work, meaning perfecting the physical world, which is important. Asher bara Elokim la'asos. God created an imperfect world that we should perfect it. So the Gemara says, that's important, but that's not the Iker. The Gemara says, well, maybe it's amal tzicha. It's perfecting the world and ourselves by speaking. Conversation, which is also important. Tzicha can be davening. Tzicha is tefillah. And tzicha is conversation between people. People praise each other. They're mechazik each other. Communication between people makes progress possible in the world. That's what happened in Migdal Bavel when they couldn't speak to each other. Then they couldn't progress. And they got scattered. People work together by talking to each other. Mara says that's important, but that's not the Iker. The Iker is by speaking Torah. And Torah perfects the world and all the worlds. That's the Iker, but the other ones are also important. So the Iker Tikkun of this world is through speech. Speech in tefillah, speech in communication, in being mechazik, those positive things in the world that the Rebbe Mishlam wants by people communicating with each other, strengthening each other, and through Torah. And just like Talmud Torah is connected kulam, the Yerushalmi says that there are three averis that a person gets punished both in this world and the next. Hakeren kayemes ba'olam haba. Shenifroi nimenu ba'olam hazeh, v'hakeren kayemes lo. Gili arayis, shvichas damim, and avodah zarah. The lashon hara k'neged kulam. Says the Maral, why? Because these three things destroy a person, one aspect of the person. Gili arayis destroys the body. Shvichas damim usually is from anger. It destroys the nefesh, the emotional side of man. When a person murders somebody, he's destroying himself emotionally. When he's over Gili Arayis, he's destroying himself physically. And Avodah Zarah destroys the neshama. But Lashon Hara, in one swoop, destroys all parts of the person because it makes you worse than an animal. Because that which distinguishes a person from the animal is speech. And when you use your speech to denigrate other people, it's the opposite of what the purpose of the speech. So you're worse than an animal. An animal doesn't talk, or at least doesn't say anything bad. A person uses his speech, he's worse than an animal in a negative way. So he's like, he's dead. He's functioning, but for no positive purpose. He's not improving and perfecting the world. So basically he's a dead person. Because what he's doing with his life is insignificant, is irrelevant, is harmful. So basically he's functioning, but he's really dead. So therefore tzaras, which represents death, represents what's it called, what happens when a person speaks Lashon Hara. So therefore, a person, before we speak about people in the Torah and the halachos of birth, the Torah first said the halachos of kashrus, because a person was put in this world to utilize everything and to perfect it, bring it to perfection. And by eating animals, we raise their level. On the other hand, a person can destroy the world too and use the potential that he has for the negative. That's tzaras. That's Lashon Hara. You're right in the middle. You can be created in the end to bring the whole world to its completion, or you can be created in the end because everything else is more important than you if you don't fulfill your purpose. And on one side is the Torah of kashrus, animals, and utilizing them properly and raising them to your level by eating them. And the other is speaking Lashon Hara and taking that which makes you special and totally defiling it. So you have a choice. You're right in the middle. You can be the purpose of creation, or you can be the most insignificant thing in creation. That's the meaning of that, fact that the laws of birth are right smack sandwiched between the laws of kashrus and the laws of lashon hara. It's a rush. Okay, any questions on that? We'll go to another inning. I want to come back to this, but I want to speak about something else. The next thing I wanted to speak about really was more about lashon hara and where it comes from, as hinted to in the things that a Metzora has to do, when he's a Metzora, and how he becomes Torah. But not to speak the whole time about lashon hara only. I want to speak about a different topic first, and if there's time, we'll come back to this. Could be there will be time. And that's the following. In Parshas Metzora, so we said something from Parshas Tazria. How about Parshas Metzora? Parshas Metzora has in it Nigei Batim, the Metzoras of a house. The Gemara says that Nigei Batim comes for Tzoras Ayin, because people are selfish. And they don't share their property with other people. And therefore, the Gemara says that before the Kohen comes, the person has to take everything in the house and put it out on his lawn. Take it out of the house. And one of the reasons is to embarrass it. Because we're talking about a stingy person, a selfish person, Tzar Ayin. That when people came to borrow things from him, he said he didn't have them because he didn't want other people to benefit from his property. They're stingy, selfish. And now, before the Kohen comes, he has to take everything out of the house. That with the Kohen declares the house Tomei, the thing shouldn't become Tomei. So there's a halakha, he has to take everything out of the house. Now, all the things that his neighbors were told he doesn't have, when they ask to borrow them, they see them on his lawn. So it's a terrible embarrassment, and it shows him to be a stingy person. So that's part of the kapara for his stinginess. He'll learn not to be stingy in the future. But there's another source, a Mishnah, that says we learn something else from here. We learn HaTorah Chosam Amon Shisrael, how much God regards the money of a Jew. How precious it is to him. Because why is it necessary to take everything out of the house for fear that the Kohen's going to make the house Tameh and all the things will become Tameh? So they'll become Tameh. Take them to a mikveh and you'll make them Torah. There are ways of making things that are Tameh Torah. You can take a kli that's wood, metal, and put it in the mikveh. And it'll become Torah. But there's a kli that doesn't have tahara of a mikveh. There's nothing you can do to it to make it tahara except break it. Kli cheres, earthenware. So because of the earthenware kalim, if they become tamei, they're going to have to be broken. But an earthenware kli is almost worthless. It's the most inexpensive kind of kli. You see that the Rabban Shimon was concerned that this guy is going to have to break his kalim, his inexpensive kalim. So he commanded to take everything out of the house before the Kohen comes, so things shouldn't be tum-tum. Even the most inexpensive things. What? So only take out that? I don't know, it's a good question. But still, so the Torah was kosher also, not just for the insignificant kalim, but for the time also. You gotta take it to the mikvah, whatever, it's a loss of time. That's also money. So once the Torah What?
Time consuming to take everything out of your house, especially if it might be summer. Then you'll be saving time.
But if it's summer, you're going to have to take it out on the lawn is one thing. To go and schlep it to a mikveh and total it and bring it back is a lot more bother than just taking it out of the house and putting it on your lawn.
But taking it out and putting it on your lawn is better than nothing, in case it's summer.
It's true, but in case it's summer, it's going to cause you a lot extra. So better do something minimal now, right, and save yourself a lot of time and effort later. I think that's probably the reason. In any case, so what's the lesson? That God considered Jewish money important. Now think about it for a second. Aren't those two lessons contradictory? If you want to teach somebody not to be selfish, I would say that selfishness comes from an inordinate obsession with money. You give too much importance to money. So you're selfish. You don't want to share it with anybody else. So now if we're going to give a person at that same time a lesson of how important money is, we're contradicting. We're doing something that's detrimental to the first lesson. What I would do is make a lesson that money's not important at all. Why are you so selfish? Why are you hoarding the money for yourself? The money's not so important. So if you want to teach somebody not to be selfish, don't teach them at the same time how important money is. Because they seem to be contradictory. The answer is the following. If a person would appreciate the real value of money, then he wouldn't be selfish with it. And that means the following. The Gemara says that tzaddikim, chavidim aleihem mamonam yosem migufa. Tzaddikim, their money is more precious than their body. We learn from Yaakov Avinu that he put his body in somewhat of danger in order to go back and get some kli cheres, same thing, same earthenware kelim that he forgot. When he was running away from Esav and he had his family safely put on the other side of Machpelah Yaakov, he went back, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. And the Gemara says, Al Tikra Levado Ela Latado. It's not a Gemara, it's a Shomu, that's what we learn from. He went back for some pitchers. Some cups, earthenware cups. You see that he was willing to put himself in danger for the sake of pennies. The guy was a rich man. So we learn from there that tzaddikim chavivim aleihem mamonam yosem migufa. Now that answers a question, but it opens another question. The question it answers is, it says in Kriya Shema, Yohathas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, the chol nafshecha means even if God takes your life, you have to give up your life for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then it says, ma'otecha, you have to give up your money. So I said, I know I have to give my life. Why do I have to know I have to give my money? Because yesh amashim shechavid imalei elamon and yosem igufam. Some people's money is more precious to them than their life. So what would you think? We're talking about some sugar. Like somebody works himself to death to make more money and doesn't enjoy life. So his money is more important than his life. For that, you need a special pasuk in the Torah to tell me that a person like that, if his money is more important than his life, he should love the Rebbe Shalom more than his money, not just more than his life. The Torah says, speak about Meshugoy. But now we have an answer. It's not Meshugoy. Tzadikim, chavid emaleinu mamonam yosem migufa. It's tzaddikim who value their money more than their life. But that doesn't make any sense. Tzaddik values his money more than his life. So I think the answer is the following. But Moshe Feinstein asked the following question. In Parshas Vayishlach, it says that when Esav and Yaakov were arguing who should get the present that Yaakov sent to Esav. So Esav says to Yaakov, keep your present. Yes, we rab, I have more than I need. I don't need your presents. Yaakov says, no, you take it. Yes, we call, I have everything I need. So Moshe asked, wouldn't it be more proper, both of these men were rich men, wouldn't it be more proper for Yaakov to say, yes, we rab, I have much more than I need. I could be happy being poor. I'm rich. I have more than I need. And Esau, if he said, well, I got everything, I have more than I need. Why would Yaakov Avinu, a rich man, say, I have everything I need, and not imply that being rich is more than you need? I could be happy being poor too. Says of Moshe, there's no such thing as having more than you need. If you have the right outlook on wealth, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives every single person before they're born what they need to fulfill their purpose in life. They get a neshama, that is the neshama, that is tailor-made for their portion, with the emotions and characteristics and talents and abilities and capabilities. It's like a play. You get your part. You get a costume that fits your part. That's your body. You get, what's it called, props that you need to fulfill your part. When you come in this world, you get a costume called a body, and you get props, material possessions that you specifically need to fulfill your part. If somebody would say, well, I'm the queen, and I only got one prop, a scepter, and one robe, right? Royal robe to wear. But the court jester got 10 different changes of clothing and 10 props. So does the court jester have more than he needs? No. To be the court jester, you need all those changes of clothing and all those props. To be the queen, you only need one change of clothing and one prop. That's all. Each one got exactly what they need to fulfill their part. There's no such thing as more or less. You got exactly what you need for your part. You don't need what the other person is. Therefore, for a tzaddik, it's always yesh required, everything I need. If I'm rich, then the Rebbeinu Shlom determined I need that to fulfill my role in this world. And I can't be missing anything, because if I'm missing anything, then I'm not fulfilling my purpose. And if I'm poor, then that's what I need to fulfill my purpose. There's no more or less. A Rasha, his money is what a pleasure it can give him. So if he has $1 million, and he could be happy with $500,000, so he has more than he needs. But for a tzaddik, everything is a kli level to Hashem. And that's why, by a tzaddik, his wealth is compared to kli cheres, to earthenware. There's a special halakha when it comes to earthenware, that it's only makabel tumah from inside, not from outside. Wood, metal, if you touch it on the inside, the outside is makabel tumah. But kli cheres is only makabel tumah mi toho, not mi gadol. Only from the inside, not from the outside. And I was thinking of a logical idea behind that. Why is it like that? Somebody told me that he thinks that the Avi Nazir may say this. The idea is the following. In order for something to be makabel tumah, it has to be worth. Things that are worthless are not makabel tumah. And the more worthwhile, the more tumah. A human being is metame more than an animal, and a Jew is metame more than a god. The more valuable, the more tumah. No value, no tumah. Metal, wood, have two values. The material itself has some value, and when you make it into a kli, the kli gives it functional value. So it has intrinsic value, the chomer, the material, and a function. When you touch the inside of something, you're touching its function. When you touch the outside, you're touching the material. So wood and metal are makabel tumah inside and outside. The material has value and the function has value. But kli cheres has no value of the material. The material is worthless. It's only the function that gives it value. So only if you touch it on the inside is a makabel tumah, not on the outside. That's money. Money is something that has no intrinsic value. Its value is its function. What do you use it for? If you use it for something important, you use it for Torah, mitzvahs, to perfect the world, then it's valuable. If you use it just for your own selfish purposes, for gashmiistic things, for the sake of gashmiist of this world, then it's of no value. Or of little value. So it's like kli cheres. That's why tzaddikim chavim, it doesn't say tzaddik chashuvim amonam yosu v'gufa, it's more important. It's obviously not more important because if you're not alive, you can't use your money. But it's more holy, it's more precious. What is precious to a person, the Gemara says? What you put more effort into. That's why we were put in this world. So Olam Haba will be more precious because we put effort. But you put effort, the more precious the thing is. The less effort, easy come, easy go. You don't appreciate it. If money is a kli for Avodas Hashem, and your body is a kli for Avodas Hashem, which one do you put more effort in? Let's see. The body. How much effort do you have to put into securing your body? No. It's a birthday present. First birthday, got your body. Free. You have to put effort into maintaining your body and into using it. So out of three possible efforts, acquiring, maintaining, and using, only two of them apply to the body. How about money? So the Gemara says, tzaddikim don't steal. So they have to put a lot of honest effort into acquiring their money. Then they have to maintain it, and then they have to use it. So out of the three possible bothers, right, tirchas, when it comes to money, all three are possible. By the body, only two are. So both of them are kelim l'avodas Hashem. Which one should be more precious? The one that you put more effort into, which is the money, not the body. That's exactly what Chazal said. Tzadikim, chavidim, aleim, amonim, yosem, migufam, the kol kach lama, why? Shein posh, in the day, in the ghetto, because they don't steal. Because if you steal and you acquire your money easily, then this doesn't apply. But if you don't steal and you have to put in effort to acquire your money honestly, then it does apply. So a person who's selfish with money has narrow vision. He's a tsar ayin. He has a very narrow perspective on money. To him, money is only what it can give him pleasure. So why share it with somebody else? If he would really appreciate how much money is worth as a kli in Avodas Hashem, how much God values the money of a Jew, then he wouldn't be so selfish. Because he realizes money was made to be able to use as a kli for Avodas Hashem, to share with others, and a host of other things that you do with the money besides just getting your own personal pleasure from it. So the problem with the person who's stingy is not that he values money too much. It's that he doesn't value it enough. He doesn't value it properly. He's very narrow in his vision, his perspective of what money's all about. If he'd have a broader vision of money and how important it really is, then he would, what's it called, he would know how to deal with money properly. So the two lessons are not contradictory. They are supplementary. If we want a person not to be selfish, and we're embarrassing him by showing that he has to show his neighbors the kelim that he said he didn't have, at the same time we teach him how valuable money is in God's eyes. Because obviously money's an important thing. So it can't just be for my selfish purposes. There must be something more to it. So the two lessons complement and supplement each other. And that's why Chazal says something else. Here we're punishing this guy because he's a tzara'i, because he's stingy. So what's going to come from the punishment? That after his house is demolished because of the tzara'as, he's going to find the treasure that was left there by the Shiva Sa'am, by the Emor. I mean, if we want to punish a guy for being stingy, we give him a reward of the treasure. Now the idea is that the Rebbe Shem wanted to give this person the reward. But he saw that he won't use it properly. He's a stingy person. His whole concept of money is to use it for his own personal purposes, which not only won't aid him in Avodas Hashem, it'll probably hinder him. So it's not no presence to give him the money in that situation. So first the Rebbe Shem teaches him a lesson of how to view money properly, and now he can have the matmon. Now you can have the treasure. I want to give you that treasure, but I don't want to give it to you in a way that's going to be detrimental. I want to give it to you in a way that you appreciate it and use it properly. So first I'll teach you the lesson of how not to be stingy, how to look at money in a much broader sense, not just what it can do for you, but how you can use it as a kli for Avodas Hashem. And once you learn that lesson, now we'll give you the treasure. Now you use it properly. Now it's something that I want you to have. Why don't you have it from the beginning? But if it's going to be detrimental, then it's not going to be a reward. It's going to be a punishment. So the punishment first corrects the person's dishes on money, and then gives them the reward. Now it's not a reward. So therefore, all the things fit together. On the one hand, it's not necessarily punishment, it's an education of how to look at money properly. So in the end, you'll be able to get that money that you need for your avodah Hashem, and you'll use it properly. That's the idea. Just quickly, in another few minutes, let's go back to some of the things that a Metzorah has to do. And we said regular Tzaras comes because of Lashon Hara. One thing he has to do is separate himself from people. A Metzorah can't be around people. He can't come into a walled city. He has to be alone. Why? Because one of the things that causes Lashon Hara is Taiva. Taiva is that people, what's it called, want everything for themselves. Taiva Yabakish Nikud. When a person is a very sensuous person, he wants all the physical pleasures, so he doesn't want to share them with other people. Because I want the whole pie for myself. I don't want you to have part of the pie. Therefore, Shlomo Amela says in Mishlei, Lataiva Yabakesh Nikra. In order to fulfill one's taivas, a person would rather be alone. Now, there are certain taivas that you need other people to be able to get them. Okay, some obvious taivas are robbing a bank. Right? One robber can't rob a bank. You need a whole group. So he needs other people to get what he wants. But that's not working together with other people, that's manipulating other people, taking advantage of them. I need you so I can get what I want. In the end, I don't need you anymore. Then the robbers kill each other, right? Till one of them ends up getting everything. But when I need you, I'll use you. But I'm not working together with you, I'm using you. So there are times like that. People use other people to be able to satisfy their tithes. But that's not any kind of actus, that's abuse, that's use. I'm using somebody else to satisfy myself. And you can imagine there's a lot of tithes like that. So therefore, we tell the Baal Lashon Hara, and therefore people think that other people are, if they're going to be successful, then I'm not going to be. I'm going to lose out if you have, because I want everything. So I speak Lashon Hara about other people to bring them down. Right? There's two ways of making yourself big. Raising yourself above other people or knocking other people into the ground. So one of the things that Baal Lashon Hara does is to knock other people so he'll be able to get everything for himself. So that's bavagation. Be alone. You're a loner. That's led you to speak Lashon Hara because you're only concerned about yourself. You want everything for yourself. So now, let's see how you like it to be alone. Then he has to tear his clothing. It's another thing. Clothing represents the covet of a person. People speak Lashon Hara because they want covet. Because they're jealous of other people. So we tell them, tear your clothing. Tear that covet. Covet led you to speak Lashon Hara. Tamei Yikra means he has to go and declare himself to be Tamei. Why? Because Lashon Hara comes a lot from looking for other people's faults, not being done in the Kapsos. Looking for every negative thing about another person, instead of looking and seeing the positive things. So now, instead of declaring and seeking out the negative things of other people, he's hired now to tell us his chesronos. He has to go around declaring his own chesronos. Tell me, and see how not nice it is to have to look for your chesronos and declare it. He has to cover his mouth. Cover his mouth with a bedding, like the Arabs. Because people talk and they don't realize that speech is a very important thing. And they waste their speech on Narishkeit, and from Narishkeit comes to things that are awesome. That's why after Shmoneh Esrei, we say, Elokai Mitzor L'Shomim Eirav. Why, I just used my mouth to communicate with God. Now I can appreciate what a tremendous kli that is. Now I should now drag it in the mud and speak lashon hara. So when you appreciate how important your mouth is, and when something's important, you hide it away for safekeeping. You don't just leave it open, right? You protect it. So the mitzvah has to cover his mouth to say, that's a very important kli, your mouth. Don't use it in a frivolous way, because that's what led you to speak lashon hara. You didn't appreciate how important speech is. And rosh parua, yes, let his hair grow. Can't take a haircut. Why? Because sometimes when a person is too involved in gashmius, and everything is important to him, the most trivial things are important, he doesn't have time to think about the really important things in life. And that leads him to use his mouth and his speech in the wrong way. When a person is too concerned about trivial things, the Rambam says, why is it usur, lo sikom lo sikom, to take revenge? Classical example, somebody comes and says, can I borrow your lawnmower? Reuven says to Shimon, can I borrow your lawnmower? And Shimon says, no. So Reuven has to go out and buy a lawnmower. Shimon the next day says, you know, my lawnmower broke, can I borrow yours? So Reuven is not allowed, if the only reason he's not loaning it is his revenge, he's not allowed to take revenge and not loan it. And he can't even say, I'm not like you, I'll give you the lawnmower. That's lo sikom. He's harboring a grudge. Best to forget about it. So the Rambam says one of the reasons is because who has time to fill up the gray matter in your mind with trivialities of remembering if the guy gave you the lawnmower or not? There's so many more important things in this world to be involved with than to keep a cheshbon. This guy did this and this guy did that. And he gave me this and he didn't give me that. You're wasting your life and your brain and your memory for trivialities. You have a computer, only has a certain amount of memory. If you put Marishkeit on, you're wasting it. Use it for important things. Your mind also only has a certain amount that it can deal with. If you're going to be so concerned about trivialities, which is representative of combing your hair and what's it called and taking a haircut, forget about those things for a while. And focus in on the important things in life. If you will, then you won't end up speaking lashon hara about other people. You'll realize there's a lot more important things in life to be concerned about. So those are the things that lead a person to lashon hara, and those are part of the tikkun of getting tzaras and having to go through all of these things that counteract the roots and causes of lashon hara.